The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me are Craig Konstantinovich and Spencer Hager, our resident certified financial planners. And today we're unpacking the basics of alternative investments. When most people think of investing, they think of the stock market. They might think of crypto. I kind of wanted to get into this. This is way over my head. So I'm interested in what we're going to talk about today. I'm hoping our followers are as well. So the first question that I have is if you can just explain what exactly qualifies as an alternative investment? How are they different from regular stocks and bonds?
Yes, normally when you hear alternative investments, as soon as the word alternative, direct, those kind of things come into play, usually just means a higher risk investment with the opportunity, hopefully, for higher returns. That's not always the case. But it just basically means something that may be outside the normal of a traditional, you know, Fortune 500 company or something that you may find in the stock market. Alternative investments could be startup companies. It can be rental real estate. It can be, like you mentioned, cryptocurrency. Basically anything that adds diversification further beyond just the regular stock market.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't necessarily think it comes down to more risk always. A lot of those definitely do. I just think it's anything outside the traditional investing, which is like stocks, bonds, mutual funds, things like that.
Is real estate considered alternative?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I put it in that category.
And
yeah.
ETFs?
No, ETFs.
Yeah. ETFs are like, yeah, they're more ETFs, exchange-traded funds. They're very similar to mutual funds in the fact that you have a basket of investments all piled into a single fund. Where the difference is between mutual funds and ETFs is mutual funds, they trade once a day. They trade based off of what happens at through the market, and then at close, that's when the market change or when the fund changes. With an ETF, they change intraday, just like stocks. So you could have an ETF that's trading at $100 right at the open of the market, and then it could be $150 by 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and then it could drop down to $125 at close of market at 4. So the price can vary throughout the course of the day.
Okay, that's good to know. Common types of alternative investments. So besides stuff, things that you've already talked about, so we talked about real estate. Is gold considered an alternative?
Mm-hmm.
And how is that handled on the stock? I've always been curious about that. You know, you've got a bar of gold sitting in your basement or in your, you know, your safe. You know, how do you even begin to consider that as an investment, as, you know, as opposed to just sort of a tangible item that you could?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. Yeah, to your point, you can buy like gold bullion or something like that, or gold coins.
You can
buy
gold bars at Costco, Spencer. Come on.
Costco?
Yeah, absolutely. Costco is advertising gold bars for sale.
Wow.
Craig's going to be as bad as you and interrupt him on the show. But,
crazy, though. I'm actually intrigued by that, too. That's sort of a sidebar. Why would they get into that? It's kind of strange.
We got to get the CEO of Costco in here. But so you could buy like that. You can technically buy like gold ETFs, things like that. So you're not actually buying the physical asset, but you're, again, buying like a fund that in theory they're buying up the gold with the capital you put into there. And so you're getting the exposure, and it operates the same way. You just don't own the physical asset, but it's still going to be tracking.
So it's considered
gold,
like a vessel more than anything else.
Yeah, conduit.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, and the other piece to it, too, is so like a physical gold bar, for instance, from a tax perspective, it's going to have a very different tax treatment than any kind of alternative investment, anything like that, where it's going to be taxed as a collectible as opposed to being taxed on capital gains taxes or ordinary income taxes. Collectibles, whether it's a gold bar, whether it's Beanie Babies, whatever the case may be, like, they're going to have a separate flat tax of 28%, whereas if you have an alternative investment, it may be taxed at ordinary income based off of your regular marginal tax brackets, or it could be taxed at capital gains tax rates.
I bet a lot of people didn't know that. My dad had a gold bar. I can remember it was about this big. And I always wondered, how is that even an investment? It's just something you melt into jewelry, I suppose, to me, you know. So it's the fact that it's a taxable element, too, mm-hmm. that's even more off of the radar.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like most alternative investment, it's about hedging, right? I mean, if you're buying into real estate, it's because there's a hedge, and I know we'll get into more gold and silver.
Well, I want to first, you need to explain to me what hedging is, because I have no idea what that is.
Just trying to reduce risk.
Okay.
Right, so, you know, if all of your eggs are in one basket, whether it's you bought the S&P 500, again, like stocks, bonds, mutual funds, that's all in the traditional category. All your eggs are in that basket. It's got a proven track record. It's probably a safe way of investing. When you're starting to get into the alternatives, it's because, you know, to Craig's point, maybe you're looking to get a higher rate of return. Maybe there's some risk that comes with that. The other piece is you're trying to buy into some assets that are, not to get too technical, but less correlated, meaning that if the market takes a dip, you know, maybe your alternatives are going to perform in a different way. And so you've got different exposures that protect you, but there are definitely some risks that comes with it. So that's why there's always a hedge. So to your point, like gold and silver, often not super liquid. Craig's point, it's a high tax rate, but some people like it because it's, you know, a hedge against the dollar and currency fluctuation in the market if it's fluctuating. So all those kind of play in.
So weighing risks and rewards, I cannot talk today. Question is, are the alternative investments riskier than usual? You said not always earlier,
yeah.
Right? What are the pros and the cons of an alternative investment versus, you know, the stock market or something that's, you know, super relatable?
Usually the biggest piece is just the liquidity factor, how quickly you could get money back out. I mean, the stock market, by its very nature, you're putting what something is valued at in front of the entire world, the entire general public, and you're saying, hey, if I've got my shares of Amazon right now and they're valued at $100, if I need $100, I can sell that share of Amazon and I can get that back. When it comes to some of these alternative investments, more times than not, these are highly illiquid assets. So like if it's real estate, yeah, you may be able to go out, get a mortgage, get a loan of some type against the actual real estate itself, but you can't just instantly go out there and say, hey, I need $100, let me get that from my house. No, you have to find a way to tap into the equity and then use that to fund your goals. Or fund what you need it for.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think pros, obviously, diversification. Con would be also like cost barriers, usually the alternatives. Maybe not gold, silver, but like even crypto and things like that, they usually have a high cost barrier. You got to come to the table with $10,000, $15,000, $25,000, $50,000 just to get started. And so that's pretty tough for some people compared to you can buy virtually any stock on the market for, you know, $400 or $500. There are obviously some that trade a lot higher than that, but it's broadly accessible. You don't have to worry about it. And I think the other con with alternatives is lack of transparency, depending on what you're getting in on. Like again, like private equity or venture capital and things like that. Like most people aren't just going out and buying a private business or investing into it. You're finding a vehicle to get that access into private equity companies that are, you know, there's some growth potential, but you can't buy stock in their company on the market. Generally, to do that, the costs are high, the fees are high, and the transparency is not super great. But the hopeful pro is diversification and a nice rate of return. That's why people do it.
So if I'm following you correctly, if let's say there's a company that is responsible for flipping houses, that's all they do. They buy up big chunks, big blocks of homes, and they flip them and sell them. You can buy into that entity, but there's a fee to buy it, like almost like a membership style approach to it?
I would think of it like it's a management fee, right? Okay. You're paying for their services. They're the ones doing all the work, you know, operating the investment, doing the due diligence to locate the properties that they're buying. You're buying into that. You don't really have to do anything other than you're the capital, and so there's going to be a fee charge with
that. So fee on top of the dollar amount that you're putting into it.
So, yeah, fee on the dollar amount that you're putting into it may not necessarily be there. There's different ways that fees can be structured. But like to Spencer's point, for instance, let's say we'll just use Columbus-based companies as the example. So AEP, American Electric Power, big in Columbus. They're trading right now out in the open market. You can find their stock, their ticker symbol in the S&P 500 right now is readily accessible. Micro Center, small mom and pop shop company that's here in town. There's several locations, but they are not a publicly traded company. So if Spencer and I decided, hey, let's get together, let's get $2 billion and let's buy Micro Center along with another mom and pop shop, you know, electric boutique or, you know, electronics boutique rather, excuse me, whatever the case may be, and then let's lump them all together. Well, we may have ownership rights to all those individual companies, but you still can't go out and buy their individual stocks. We may get other people to come in and invest with us in order to buy up these companies, but we're the ones that are the masterminds behind, well, why do we pick company XYZ over company ABC? We're the ones that are managing it. So to Spencer's point about transparency and fees, we may put a higher dollar amount on our time, our effort in assessing which small companies to invest in versus, you know, the stock price for AEP. That's based off of what the general public sees and what they react to. So, hey, hurricanes are coming through. There's talks about people losing power. Power companies aren't probably going to be doing great. Maybe we dump AEP. There's that transparency that's out there. But for our venture capital fund or our small little investment, we are the ones that are controlling that, saying we are the ones that are going to dictate which companies we get into, when do we get out of them, or what do we do with them in the interim.
So you're the strategist.
Yep.
Essentially.
Yep.
Like Vanguard-ish, mm-hmm. right? Okay,
yeah.
That makes sense.
Yep.
How does adding an alternative investment to your portfolio protect your money? Does it?
I think it does.
Especially if the market's not doing well.
Yeah, regardless, I think it does. Again, it's just from the diversification standpoint. I'm afraid I'm going to sound like a wonk, but again, if you're adding the diversification, I'm throwing out a bunch of technical terminology, but like again, if you're doing real estate and all you have is stocks and bonds, yeah, I'd say you're helping reduce risk. Now, no telling it's going to pay off in the next 12 months versus over 5 to 10 years, but you're getting something that's a different exposure. It's less correlated to the market. Diversification is a good thing, so that's going to help you. I'm not saying always more diversification is great. Like, you can buy gold and silver, a ton of it. Are you technically diversifying? Yes. Do you need it? You know, case by case basis. I'm not huge on recommending it often. So you have to kind of go back to, you know, why are you looking to get in alternatives to begin with? If you're just doing it to chase a higher rate of return, that's probably a losing game. I'm not sure. You know, everyone has their own risk profile. If you're doing it to diversify, sounds great. Now, which alternative is going to be the best fit for that diversification you're looking for? Because that's not always an inherent positive to me.
It sounds like you should start small.
Probably. I mean, dip your toes in with anything I say. You don't want to go top heavy with alternatives, because then the traditional investing is the diversification you need to get back to. So it's a balancing act for sure.
Yeah. Where I think the other piece too, it may seem fundamental, but like we've always heard, and like I heard from John many years ago, you know, most investors lose, and they lose because they don't know why they're investing. A very simplistic way of looking at it. But if you're just saying, hey, I don't believe in the stock market, so I'm going to buy gold or silver or real estate. Well, okay, that's all well and good, but what's your exit strategy? What are the tax implications? When are you going to make a move? Like, these are simple things that with the stock market, it's relatively easy because, again, it's a wide open forum. It's readily accessible. But then when it comes back down to it for the alternative side, people are more, or they have, as the current phrase is, they have diamond hands. They want to hold on to them for as long as humanly possible, and they're not willing to get out of it. So, you know, when you think about it, when you're really investing, you need to invest to achieve your goal. No more, no less. If you had your goal of getting $1 million saved up in 10 years and you had the ability to save $100,000 each year, then by all means, you're going to reach your goal of having $1 million. Now, what's more important, the fact that you earned a 0% rate of return on your money or the fact that you reached your goal? It's the fact that you reached your goal. So you can't lose sight of that as you're looking at this, because you can always say, oh, well, real estate did better here, or crypto's been crushing the market. Why am I not exposed to that? Well, that's all well and good, but if you're just trying to get the highest rate of return, you're always going to be investing with a rearview mirror, because no one has that perfect crystal ball to know exactly what's going to be the next great performing thing a day from now, let alone a year from now.
Analysis meets psychology.
There you go.
That's, you know, and how most people, I would imagine, can't even be, you know, subjective.
No. If you have a gold broker and you have someone that's interested in
objective.
Gold.
Objective.
You're okay, yeah.
You're okay.
I was like, thanks for watching my face. Yeah, I knew that was wrong when I said it.
I just rolled with it. I knew what you meant.
I
rolled with that, so... but yeah, I mean, most people aren't.
Yeah, you can't look at yourself and say the reason I'm doing this is because I like the thrill of the hunt and I don't care if I lose and I'm going to rationalize losing it anyway to do it again.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, you never want to, like I said.
Get rich quick.
Exactly. I mean, that's all well and good. And certainly some people are fortunate enough to do that. But then again, lottery winners are also readily available, and that's why everyone plays the lottery, because, hey, you can't win unless you play.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what investing is. Good investing is disciplined, methodical, it's goal-oriented. It's not just, hey, here's what I think is going to be the greatest performer, let me dump all my money here and then forget about everything else.
That's a really good part of the conversation that a lot of people just take for granted, I think. It's so behaviorally
I mean,
reinforced.
All finances, yeah, right?
Yeah.
All of it is.
What kind of fees, if I were to ask, you know, what kind of fees would you pay for an alternative investment? And I guess they vary, right? Or is there a table or something that people
I mean, there's some hard and fast rules. Some like loose rules depending on the type of alternative. If you're buying gold and silver, again, depending on how you're buying it, it depends on what exchange you're buying it through. Often there'll be some pretty stiff commissions coming off the top that you get hit up with the markups. If you're doing like private equity, hedge funds, things like that, it's usually the 2 and 20, which is 2% of whatever you have invested every year. That's just the management fee plus 20% of profits and things like that. So those really haven't budged much at all recently. And so those are the fees you can look out for. Crypto, again, like depending on the exchange you're doing, all those, to my knowledge, have transaction fees to some extent. If you're selling, when you're buying and selling, you're getting hit with commissions and things like that. So each one's going to be a little bit different, but there's definitely something.
So as somebody's doing their homework to partake at, you know, at the base level, where do they start? Do they go to a strategist for this, or they go to a specific company that they like? Where do you find it?
I was going to say, it's tough to point to a firm resource, ideally, and this is not like a self-plug. You probably need to get some sort of, if you're not super familiar with the space, get some sort of third-party expert, whether it's a financial advisor, someone, you know, a broker in the space, someone who does commercial real estate. If it's, you know, real estate, you can't just, I wouldn't say inherently go to a strategist, but you got to get someone, because, you know, looking up articles online will help some, but finding the resources and knowing what to look for and compare and contrast different alternatives, you know, you probably need someone to help out with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you definitely need to get someone else involved, whether it be, you know, to Spencer's point, a broker or something like that. But the other aspect that you need to consider yourself, or make sure that you are considering in making this investment, is the exit strategy, how exactly it works, how liquid the investment may be, the tax ramifications, the other pieces we've touched on here. Because again, you know, to Spencer's point, if I want to get into real estate, maybe I'm a realtor and I think I know my specific area. I know it doggone well. And I know exactly what to do and not to do. I know the areas that are hot, up and coming, everything else. And hey, I find this one house. It's well and good. All right. Well, I buy that house. Okay. So am I going to make that a flip property? Am I going to make that a rental property? Is that going to be my only property? Do I want to pay that property off? What's my depreciation? Like, all of a sudden, I've listed 10 different things that are impacted by one specific property, and you're still in a very concentrated position. You've got one singular real estate exposure. You may have, you know, thousands of individual stocks, bonds, mutual funds, whatever, but you've got one piece of real estate. So you're going to live and die by how that piece of real estate does. So you better make sure that that's the right one, and you better make sure that you work out all of the kinks and understand the pros and cons to that. Whereas even with like cryptocurrency or anything like that, we say cryptocurrency like it's, you know, very easy to find, but are you in Bitcoin, Ethereum, Dogecoin? Like, there's all these different cryptocurrencies that are out there too, and precious metals. Hey, do I want copper? Do I want gold? Do I want silver? There's so many factors and there's so many things that go into it. You, more times than not, when people say alternatives, they jump to something that they're passionate about, not something that they're necessarily knowledgeable on. So that's where you need to be careful too, and you don't want to drink too much too quickly.
That's a great stopping point. Good advice. So do your homework.
Should we do like a quick recap since we kind of jumped all over the place?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I would just say I think good alternative invest. Like I think to do it the right way, it probably should come later on in your investing. And maybe I'm a little bit biased with that, but it should not be the first thing you're jumping into. You should have a lot of other boxes checked off. And I think at this point, and I'm sure someone else listening to this could point to a few articles that dispute what I'm saying, but I think because of how our, you know, articulate the investment landscape's become, like most people can appreciate that, like there's not really an argument to be made anymore that the hedge fund's always going to outperform just doing traditional investing, or that real estate's going to outperform it. There are plenty of articles that will tell you it's not going to, and you may even lag behind. So going in for the rate of returns, losing game to Craig's point, it shouldn't be the first thing you're doing. And like definitely just slow down every time you're trying to jump in on one of these alternatives, because generally there are a lot more risks or, you know, things to consider that will tie you up other than the pros. And so you really have to take all that into account before you just see a historical rate of return that looks good. Let's dive all in, because there's usually two pros and like six cons. Not to say it's a bad idea. It's just there's a lot more to it than just normal investing, and that's where you have to be careful.
You think that? That's great.
Great job, Spence.
Yeah, great. Yeah. That's
it sounded good in my ear.
Excellent. Excellent wrap up. Thanks very much. It's a complicated aspect of investing. We appreciate that, Spencer. That's it for today. We hope that you'll tune in, and we'll catch you on the next topic.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a 1-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.